Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today, a glorious day in South Texas, just ahead of Franchise Expo South, which will be at NRG Center tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday, where some of the biggest brands in franchising will be exhibiting their wares and their opportunities, as well as a host of different seminars. Hope to see all the great franchise professionals coming into town. And to that end, please, please, please travel safe. And of course, traveling, Stan Friedman, my co-host, is actually on a plane right now, should be landing just about any minute. And hopefully he will catch on the air with us in a few moments or at some point during the show. But of course, with airlines as they are, one never knows. And of course, we're just ahead of the IFA 2016 convention in San Antonio, Texas, the 56th annual event. Hard to believe we were just in San Antonio six, 7 years ago for the 50th, and we're already back in San Antonio, and it should be a great event. So, you know, today's show, Protecting, Promoting, and Enhancing Franchising, is really piggybacking last week's show when we talked about the Mutual Fund of Franchising, where our guest was Tom Portese, the CEO of MFE Expositions and the producer of the Franchise Expo South and other conferences. And of course, in conjunction with a sponsorship by the International Franchise Association. So the tradition continues this week on Franchise Today, as Robert Crisanti, president and CEO of the International Franchise Association, will provide some of his perspective on the state of franchising and an outlook on the upcoming annual convention. And it marks the fifth year in a row the leader of the IFA is a guest on our show live. As busy as their schedules are, I'm always flattered at the time that they're able to give us. And, of course, it's just ahead of the event. So really looking forward to that. And with that, and without further ado, I'd like to welcome Robert Crisanti to Franchise Today.
Hi, Paul. Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm a big fan of the show and of yours and Stan's in particular. Appreciate the opportunity to get a chance to speak with you.
Well, it's definitely our honor, especially as busy as you are. I mean, not just, you know, in the position, you know, you've been appointed to, you know, since September, which I know has just got to be a massive job, and we're carrying this on your shoulders, so to speak, is the way I look at it. And of course, we as Stan and I have been talking to, you know, Catherine Monson and various people, and Dina Dwyer Owens and various people from the franchise community about all the different issues that are going on. I mean, obviously, it's also one of the more challenging times for franchising. Not there's doom and gloom. It's just like anything else. There are challenges, and of course, you jumped right into the middle of it, and my hat's off to you on that, because that just had to be a daunting task, but I know you jumped in with both eyes open, both ears open, arms might have been flailing away, the legs were running forward, but you're there, and we're so glad to have you at the helm.
Well, I'm really blessed by the team that I have around me, Paul. As you know, the staff at the IFA is just second to none, and I've had a lot of experience in different trade associations and in running different organizations in my career. And this one really stands out, and it's one of the reasons that I'm so delighted to get a chance to do this. One of the things that goes without saying is that Steve Caldero put together a great team here, and with the snowstorms and inclement weather that we've had pounding the East Coast and Washington D.C. in particular, people have been working late nights and weekends to try to A, shovel themselves out of their homes, and B, take care of the massive influx of interest that we've had in the convention. We're still tallying the numbers for this week, but year over year we have an incredible turnout, ready for San Antonio of attendees. The registrations are currently slightly exceeding the registrations that we had for Las Vegas. And as you may know, the Las Vegas show is usually our big show, and then the off-year shows, be they in New Orleans or in San Antonio or other places around the country, tend to have a little bit of a smaller attendance. But we are running ahead of Las Vegas numbers, and everyone is extremely excited here for the show. And we've got great programming and great features put together. And as you know, our new chairman is going to be taking the gavel at the end of the convention. So we've got a lot of exciting stuff going on.
We certainly do. And of course, the weather is just Chamber of Commerce perfect right now for Franchise Expo South. 80 degrees and sunny and nary a cloud in the sky. I think it's going to be hard to get, you know, Paul Rocky and Scott Lair and John and Greg and the rest of the team out of the Texas spirit, especially if the weather continues next week. But at least it'll be good margarita drinking weather. That's for sure. And you mentioned, you mentioned the new chairman coming in, Steve Zashin. I mean, just an unbelievable person. But what I always marvel about are these individuals. You know, Melanie this year. And all the great chair people that we've had over the years, that, you know, people don't realize how much time, how much they give up. I mean, they run, you know, Steve Romanello running Rock Capital and basically gives up a year to be at the helm of the IFA from the chairman's perspective. It always just blows me away, Robert.
It takes a tremendous amount of time, energy, and effort. And, you know, the entire executive team, you know, from Shelley, you know, and Liam, David Barr is going to be coming on in short order here, as well as Melanie and Aziz. They give so much time. At one point, Shelley said to me, you know, I've spent almost 40 hours on IFA business this week. Do you believe that? And I'm sure you find that hard to believe. And I said, no, I don't, because I think all of them see this as true service and a service to this business model and to this community. And they give of their financial resources and particularly of their time away from their family and away from their businesses that are so important to them to give back to the community. And I'm just grateful for all of their energy and enthusiasm and especially their talent because they are really standout leaders, all of them. The top of the franchising business, and that they would spend their time, choose to spend some portion of their time with us, hopefully not a full 40 hours a week, is amazing. And so I appreciate that you recognize that.
Oh, it's got to be just a huge job. And I would kid with Shelley, oh, you had an off week, because I know Shelley would put in 50, 60 or 70 hours a week. I mean, Susan Blackbeth, you know, so many of these franchise professionals that are also moms, and watching how they juggle their life, and they do it so it appears effortlessly. I know it's not effortless, but it just appears that from the outside looking in. And of course, as much time as I spend on social media and I'm connected with all them, and I get to see what goes on behind the scenes, the vacations, the school projects and the whole nine yards. I'm always flabbergasted at the way they just make it look so easy.
It's a testament. It's a testament to them, and this, which is why I think the staff. We've had a meeting just a few days ago where we talked about this, and I know how much people invest and look forward to the annual convention for us, and. That's why, you know, we're so proud of with the help of all of these volunteer leaders, of what we've been able to put together. And one of our big focuses this year is on our 25th anniversary of the VetFran program, which, hearkening back to the Texas roots, was started and initiated by Dena Dwyer Owen's father, Don, who was in the military and is now celebrating 25 years. And we have an amazing number of jobs that have been created in the franchise industry, and folks from the military that have become active in this business and that are thriving. And it's because of the marriage of the skill sets that they bring from them, and the discipline and the teamwork that they bring with them from the military. I had a conversation with a senior officer who's getting ready to lead a Ranger battalion in the coming months, and he said to me, you know, sometimes it's tough for an infantryman, a ground pounder, to translate those job skills when they come out of the military into the next, into the next career. And I said, well, franchising in very many ways is the perfect access point for folks that are coming out of the military, because success in franchising requires a sense of family, a sense in many cases, and in very many cases, in fact, and a sense of teamwork, and the ability to lead and to follow when the time is right. And so it is a natural transition, and it couldn't be more exciting for us to celebrate that 25th anniversary. And we've got Stanley McChrystal, the former commander of U.S. and international forces in Afghanistan, coming to speak, to talk to us there. And I know I've got my book folded under my arm to try to get an autograph. So he's one of the leaders I've admired, being a military brat myself, and having a father who served in the U.S. government for 30 years. I'm a big fan of his, and I'm really excited to hear what he's gonna talk about when he comes to the convention.
Yeah, I mean, my hat's always off to Dena. She does such a wonderful job, and she's so genuine. And I think she just epitomizes to me relationships, which of course franchising is all about. And she takes it very seriously. I know I give all my clients now a copy of her book as they come on board as emerging franchise brands. I mean, I can't write it any better. I mean, between hers and Grow Smart, Risk Less by Shelley and some of the other ones that are out there. I mean, just where do they find time to write a book is just, beyond me.
Sure.
It's
truly amazing.
You talked about, serving, franchising when you're talking about chairman, and as we enter this year's event, I'd like to remind everybody, or better yet, encourage everybody to attend the prayer breakfast, which is on Sunday, February 21st at 7:15. This year, Todd Recknig will be the guest speaker. Last year, Mike Isaacson gave an unbelievable presentation about servant leadership that resonated with me. And, of course, Michael Seid was just stellar in his presentation. And I actually asked Michael for a copy of that, and I've read it several times since. Just remarkable. But, of course, it's early in the morning, and a lot of people will forego that. But, get up a little early on that Sunday, February 21st, 7:15 a.m. for the prayer breakfast. I think it's one of the best parts of the entire event, and it certainly gets you all juiced up and motivated for the rest of the event.
It's absolutely true, and the wisdom that gets imparted there is incredible, and people feel a little bit more free to speak their mind, there than they would in some of the other public presentations, and it's non-denominational, and as you said, Paul, well worth everyone's time to attend. Some of the other highlights that I'm really excited about, We've got Franchising Gives Back that's going to take place on Friday, February the 19th, at the Warrior and Family Support Center. It's part of the Brooke Army Medical Center in San Antonio, and the Warrior and Family Support Center provides coordinated services to patients and next of kin and extended families with a primary focus on wounded Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom warriors. It reminds me a lot of a charity that I have had a lot to do with here in Washington called the Fisher House that does some similar services. And we're delighted. I'll be there for sure. And, you know, working on our Franchising Gives Back, the staff here around Christmas time decided to engage in monthly exercises at IFA that were greater connections to the community. And we're really, as a staff, taking to heart the Franchising Gives Back concept, as so many of our corporate members do. We want to be engaged and tied to our community, and we're doing public service projects of all different kinds around the city at a minimum one a month throughout the year. So the staff has really coalesced around that, and I'm excited about those things as well. And then Next Gen and Franchising is another one, you know, IFA's initiative to build bridges between franchising companies and the millennial generation. Is housed there, and at the last convention, when I was walking down the hall to another meeting, I thought to myself, what are they giving away in that room? There are people that were literally in chairs in the hallway all leaning in. I thought they were calling out lottery numbers, and it was this Next Gen and Franchising conference, and it's really a franchising accelerator program that's coming together and being launched at the San Antonio Annual Convention. And the winners of the Next Gen in Franchising Global Contest, which we hosted with several other franchise associations from abroad, are going to engage in some of the industries that the most experienced CEOs and business leaders in our group are there to pull their plans together and take their franchising ideas to the next level. And so there's been a very robust competition with lots of participants from around the world that have been put up. And I can tell you this, the people that were there last year received not only financial assistance, but they also received another invaluable gift, which you impart through your show, which is real experienced and seasoned advice in the business of franchising. And so mentorship relationships have developed through that process as well. And then we have the Next Gen Shark Tank. That's the last I wanted to bring up.
Great.
So, yeah, and so we've got judges on panels there. They're going to be judging that contest. And, top winners of the first round are going to go on to present their plans for the final round and judging during the annual convention. So it's another one of the things that are happening there, as well as the, you know, the regular things that you're used to that people draw such high value from, discussion, breakout sessions of all different kinds.
You know, when you talk about Next Gen and franchising, that's definitely one of the initiatives that's close to my heart, and I try to stay close to Jennifer Cashel. As a matter of fact, she was a guest on our show about 6 or 7 weeks ago, as they were wrapping up this year's competition. And what a great program! Talk about a great. I was in the middle of that room last year, and yes, I could assure you they weren't giving out lottery, but. What was neat was Alexander from Austria, one of the winners last year that came over to the States afterwards. I got a chance, as Jennifer put him on a national tour, visiting all kinds of different franchise organizations. Well, he was here in Houston before he had to take off to head back to Europe. And I had an opportunity to have lunch with him and spend some time talking with him. And I still connect. Obviously, with a lot of them on social media, and it's just a tremendous initiative. But you know, like anything else, I always like to put names together like it would be a law firm. How's this law firm? Cashel, Cohen, and McKinnon. because you can't talk about Next Gen without, you know, Jennifer Cashel. You can't talk about it without Doc Cohen. You can't talk about it with David without David McKinnon's name in the mix.
Yes.
What a great trio.
Yeah.
Just phenomenal.
Again, not at the operational IFA board of directors leadership level, but folks that continue to give and that continue to be involved for the betterment of this business model. And you can't buy talent like that. We could never buy it if we weren't. So
well,
very grateful.
You know,
I apologize for the sirens, Paul, in the background. But we're on a main drag here where the vice president's motorcade and other diplomats go back and forth. So
you know, that's one of the things that I really like, and I try to stay true to form on Franchise Today, and it's the reason why we do this as a live show. It's because of that transparency. You know, I've done this with a lawyer that was at Play of Cook, and they're of course at their previous office was right across the street or in the same parking lot as a Homeland Security office, and there was a bomb threat as we were getting ready to go on the air, and but we went off without a hitch. So
yeah.
You know, sirens are fine, but you talk about, you know, we can't buy, you know, this type of talent. And I would like to recognize all the great sponsors that really make the events what they are, because obviously not only are they giving their time, but they're so generously giving of their financial resources. You know, some of them, you know, DLA Piper, BDO, Amit Kleinberger's team at Menchie's and his new concept Medici, Michael Seiden Associates, of course, Perennial, Brightstar, Benetrans, Fisher Zucker, Janet King, Chen Cohen, Frannet, and so many others. I can't thank them enough for all that they do that makes these events what they are.
It is absolutely true, and it helps us raise you know, some of the capital that we need throughout the year to handle the various different challenges. You know, Paul, I've spoken about this a couple of times already, but you know, the numbers from IHS Economics for us for the forecast for the year look you know, increasingly good and exceedingly good. You know, for 2016, we're expecting the sixth consecutive year that franchising as a business model is going to be outperforming other business models within the U.S., particularly in the same industry sectors that it works. And we have, you know, such exciting numbers. You know, we're going to see about a 3.1% growth in jobs in 2016. That equates to about 278,000 additional jobs, many of those going to be available to the young men and women that are you know, coming out of the military as the forces are drawing down. The total of direct employment in franchising is a startling 9.1 million jobs in the United States, in a place and time where jobs and jobs that teach basic skills in particular are at a premium. You know, we're continuing to produce them and continuing to sort of offer that first rung on the ladder for people who either are coming out of directly out of school or coming out of assignments like the military, where they're looking to learn trades and customer service and some of the important skills that, you know, thread the needle for them so that they can sew for the rest of their career. You know, in this economic recovery, the franchising sector has added almost 1 million jobs in the last 5 years alone. And the number of franchise establishments that we have are going to grow by more than 13,000 in 2016, and that's going to bring the total to just under 800,000 franchise establishments in the United States, a big, huge number. So growth in GDP, another $552 billion, which adds about 3% to the gross domestic product of the United States. All strong indicators, almost without exception or let up in the different business sectors in which franchising is active, and it just proves and proves again the value and the place of this business model in all of those industries.
You know, it's really truly unbelievable. I mean, a lot of people refer to franchising as the cornerstone of the economy. I think it's more than a cornerstone. I think it's the steel rebar that's throughout the foundation that helps hold it up, because there's such a ripple effect, there's such a collateral effect outside of franchising. I mean, when you think about all the different companies that are attached to it as suppliers, as service providers,
correct,
and of course, you know, customers. We couldn't do it without the patrons that frequent our businesses. But, you know, that being said, I think it's a good segue to something that's just always on my mind, which, of course, is continuing to educate people about franchising. And I'm not just talking about the general public. I'm certainly not talking about the people that have chosen franchising as their career path, whether it be from a franchisee standpoint or a franchise professional standpoint. But I'm talking about, you know, at the government level, at the corporate level, because each year, as Small Business Saturday pops up, 2 to 3 months beforehand, I just get this wild hair, and it just irks me, because a company as a behemoth like American Express, you know, really doesn't recognize franchising for what it is. And the short story here, and a lot of our listeners already know about this, but I'm passionate about it, and I want to repeat it again. You know, 4 or 5 years ago, when Small Business Saturday started up, I was promoting it like crazy to our clients and to their franchisees, until one of the franchisees brought me the agreement from American Express, and it said franchises excluded. And I was just appalled. I couldn't believe Small Business Saturday and you're leaving out franchises. It couldn't be more of a disconnect. Lo and behold, 2 months of pounding them on the phone and email and everything else to no response. I finally got somebody's attention on the day of the event by tweeting very, very aggressively that maybe franchising should stop taking the American Express card. And I got a senior VP that contacted me, and I wound up having meetings with them and their executive team that put together the program. And, Robert, I was amazed. They really didn't understand what franchising was about. And over the next 4 years, we've made some progress, but they still don't consider that there's a lot of individuals that have put their hard-earned money into this, just like any mom-and-pop on Main Street USA, the same way. And I bring that up because I felt when all of this about the minimum wage in Seattle, I felt that there was a lot of politicians up there that really didn't understand franchising. And the way they wanted to position franchising is more advantageous than the independent business owner, and of course put the rules in effect, or wanted to put the rules in effect for franchising ahead of other small businesses. And I know the IFA is very passionate about this. I know the IFA is very dedicated about this. So if you would, give us a little bit of what the scenario is and what the IFA is currently doing to address this, continue to address this increase in the minimum wage that's on the books. Give us a little bit of insight.
Well, Seattle is an interesting process, and I think you may not be giving the city leadership in Seattle enough credit, or underestimating them in some form or fashion, because I think we very clearly found that in the majority of cases of the people sitting on that city council, they fully comprehended, after being spoken to by local franchise business owners and the IFA, on a number of occasions. They fully understood what franchising is and what it's about. There were several who didn't understand, but they were smaller in number. The majority understood very well. But this is a case that repeatedly happens in policy that we see echoed all throughout the United States and even in Washington, D.C., where politics triumphs over policy. And in Seattle, it would be giving them a pass to say that they didn't understand. The majority of the people understood very well what they were doing, but they wanted to return to office more than they wanted to do the right thing, in my opinion. And so that meant that returning to office meant that there were political measures that they had to take or meet. And so while they fully understood that these people are independent businesses, often family-owned businesses, and businesses that are smaller than are deemed by their regulations to be, quote, small businesses, they decided to go ahead and pursue that anyway. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, I have so little hair left. you know, it's extraordinarily frustrating to sit across from someone and to see the light bulb come on, and they and you know, while they may not have been aware exactly of how franchising works at the beginning, when they finally understand, you expect them to turn to you and say, "Well, I'm happy to do it to introduce an amendment to fix that particular problem with the bill. I'm happy to vote against this bill." But they thank you very much in many of those cases, and in most of those cases in Seattle, they thanked us very much for taking the time and for the small business owners that were franchisees that came in with us for taking the time to spend with them. But it changed their behavior not one scintilla, and it's a difficult process. And my one of the moments that I like best is when some of our senior leaders that we've all mentioned today come along and sit across from a policymaker like that, and they see for the first time that he or she fully understands what you're saying and understands the fact that these are small businesses, no different than any other business other than that they have acquired the use of a brand and that they do business under certain rules. When they see that they still don't get the support or the votes from those folks, it's enormously frustrating, and they often say to us that, you know, that they just can't believe that someone would do something that's not rational or reasonable, and so, or even to find some way to draw a compromise down the middle. It is very simple in many cases. People are driven too much in this country by politics, and it's easy for them to want to paint something as either black or white or good or evil, and then pursue it. It is a more rare quality, increasingly over time, I find, where you have thoughtful people that sit down and try to understand a problem and try to accommodate where it really is in the world, as opposed to where they would like it to have it be, or to make it simple for themselves to have it painted in that direction. And Seattle is the epitome of that kind of a situation. And that's why I was so proud when this board decided to take that case on. And we're not going to be able to stop minimum wage increases across the United States. But singling out a particular business model because of the business model that is used, and tagging it for some arbitrary reason with punitive, unconstitutional taxation is unacceptable. And while we didn't find support at the Ninth Circuit, with all due respect, business generally does not do very well in the Ninth Circuit. And we have a conflict with another federal circuit. And so we're this board decided to invest the enormous amount of capital to take this all the way to the Supreme Court. And we filed our brief for certiorari at the Supreme Court just a few weeks ago. Seattle yesterday requested an extension of their time to respond. We'll have our chance to respond to their reply brief after that, and hopefully the Supreme Court will take this issue up because it is economically essential, and it's not just about minimum wage. It has to do with scheduling rules. It has to do with particular advertising rules. It is a very broad set of discrimination that our businesses face in different cities because they chose franchising.
It was very, very well said, and I'm glad you clarified the fact that they probably know more about franchising than at least I believe. Thank you for clarifying that. And my co-host, Stan Friedman, is on the phone. Stan, how are you today?
He's not only on the phone, but he's on the ground.
On the ground. Stan, we're right at the halfway point. Why don't you take us to the promo?
Well, I'll be happy to do that, Paul. First, I must say good afternoon to Robert. Thanks for being our guest today, and I'm sorry that I missed half of the program. But you are tuned to Franchise Today. I'm Stan Friedman, along with Paul Segretto, and we bring you Franchise Today as courtesy of the Franchise Foundry, which is Paul Segretto's wonderful business, helping emerging franchisors stand up their businesses for sustainable growth, and also helping emerging brands transition into long-term status and growth and even become legacy brands. Yours truly, Stan Friedman, and FRM Solutions, also sponsoring Franchise Today and providing robust out-of-the-box software solutions for the management of franchise relationships, both those with prospective as well as existing franchisees. And we're happy and proud today to have Robert Cresante, President and CEO of the IFA, sharing some time with us as we are on the run-up to the annual convention in San Antonio. How's that on the fly?
Yeah, that was great on the fly. And, Stan, we were talking about the early part of the show. We talked a lot about the IFA, and we were just talking about the minimum wage issue in Seattle. And, of course, I hear a lot of the going on behind you, Stan. So are you still there?
Yeah, put me on mute.
Okay. And we were just talking about Seattle and all that the IFA is doing. And so if you have anything to add or ask for Robert, feel free to chime in. But that's where we are at this point in the show.
They're planning on that you guys progress, and I'll sign in accordingly.
Great.
Okay.
Well, you know,
Robert, yeah. You know, there's just also, as we talk about this, and you mentioned, as you were talking about the minimum wage, and you talked about, you know, the difference between independent business owners and franchisees, you know, basically playing by a different, you know, different or specific rules when they're part of a franchise system. And, of course, we can't help mention that and not mention the NLRB and McDonald's and what's going on there. So if you could, what is the IFA doing, if anything, with respect to the NLRB, or is it just a matter of a sit and wait at this point?
Well, you know, this is interesting in the sense that one of the things that I have been charged with coming in, and one of the plans I presented to the board and that was enthusiastically embraced, was we need a culture at IFA that embraces open dialogue with all of the parties with whom we have to operate. And while it is enormously frustrating and often feels insulting, you know, having our industry and business model run over in a way by these federal regulations that aren't well thought out, that were not put out in the form of regulations so that there could be advice and comment from the citizenry and the affected parties, but rather just willy-nilly court decisions. It raises everyone's ire and hackles, but it is required upon us to, for cooler heads to prevail for the moment, and to engage in conversations to see where the misunderstandings are, if there are any, and to stand up for what is right. And so I want to say at the get-go, we have a number of significant speakers that are coming to the convention, politicians, state senators. We have the National Labor Relations Board, Richard Griffin, coming to speak at the board. We have Maria Contreras Sweet from the SBA, and, you know, and others coming in. So we have we are opening up. We are engaging in meetings with everyone from the Department of Labor to folks on Capitol Hill, to meetings inside of the administration. Thank you. Shout out to Stan for helping thread the needle on that particular meeting last week at the White House. I think we're utilizing resources and folks that we have to open new avenues of dialogue, because letting our frustration spill over and showing anger at these things isn't necessarily going to get us a more fair hearing at the end of the day. We're equally as forceful as we have always been, standing up for the rights of franchisees and franchisors, but we're going to do everything we can to productively engage with these folks, be they the National Labor Relations Board or any of the other agencies that are involved. And Paul, back to the question you asked, which was the National Labor Relations Board is working on the McDonald's case, and everyone is highly focused on that particular case. In fact, when we met with Richard Griffin in his office, he spoke about that case and said, "I can't give you much information on it." And I said to him, it just so happens that I'm almost completely uninterested in the McDonald's case, because McDonald's is very big and tough, and they can stand up for themselves. I don't like it as a matter of policy, and you know, it's perfectly clear to you, we've articulated why that is, but I'm worried about other businesses and other franchises in this process. And I mentioned, he said to me at the time, "Robert, there is a there's a pattern that happens here at the National Labor Relations Board. Some 60% of all complaints that we have filed against businesses on the labor front are ultimately dismissed without action, and nothing happens. So those 60 are very easily disposed of. Then we have the other 40 or so percent that are left." And he said, "The smallest amount of those actually go to trial. Most of them settle out in the process. So aren't you, Robert, making a mountain out of a molehill?" And those are words that he didn't say, but that was his conjecture out of that process. And I said to him, "Let me tell you the story of a small 17-unit franchise that had a completely spurious accusation made against the franchisor and the franchisee for being joint employers." And I said, "And by the way, the good news is they fell into the 60% that you just described." And I said, "And would it surprise you to know that that franchisor almost went out of business defending himself against the power and the authority of the National Labor Relations Board? He was in business for 4 years, and he used 3 years of his profit to pay for the legal fees that he had in defending against a completely made-up, trumped-up set of allegations. And I said it took almost 10 months to resolve this. And I said, you know, at some point the franchisor said to me on the phone, I'm almost ready to admit that I'm Cinderella. Just get me out of this pain cave of dealing with a government agency that is so big and powerful that it just overwhelms me and dwarfs me. And when Stan and I had this conversation, I said to him, what I find so profoundly unfair is that these labor laws were created to engage what was once a thriving and giant manufacturing industry in this country that was probably grossly out of balance with regard to workers' rights. And now we are in a situation where those same labor laws are being applied to small business. And small business cannot cope with having to defend itself against the power of government. Imagine the IRS kicking in your door and doing random audits of franchising. Imagine the labor, or you don't have to imagine, the Labor Department is coming. They've already announced they're going to be doing random investigations of franchises on the East Coast, on the West Coast of the United States to talk about wage and hour issues. Not because they have some empirical study that shows this, but because that's where they think they're going to find wrongdoing. So those are the things that build this frustration up inside of us, and we really have to combat it. But we have to be forceful in presenting to these public policymakers our perspective, and in fact the fact that we're right. And in almost all of those cases, I'm not speaking about if there's a joint employer relationship, as I said to Richard Griffin, that's going on out there, you should by all rights prosecute it. But what's happening here is the rules are being changed midstream, and the people that are getting crushed under the wheels of this process are people other than McDonald's at the moment.
Yeah.
And sorry about my rant.
No, Robert, I'm thrilled to. I'm thrilled that you were able to keep that meeting with Don Graves at the White House. And from his perspective, he's been a longtime friend of franchising and somebody who has a fair and balanced mindset to the rights, wrongs, and the goods and the bads and the things that have to be listened to from their end, as well as you know, the government's perspective on these issues. I have a question for you, Robert, that maybe is, you may have touched on this with Paul. You talked a little bit earlier this year about social media and how we're really going to need to utilize social media this year to try to help change the perspective that the general masses may have about the difference between perception and reality when it comes to what franchising really is. Have you guys talked about that before I got off the plane today? If not, would you talk a little bit about that now?
Yeah, we haven't, and it's not my role to say today, steal the thunder from our incoming chairman. But as you and I discussed, it is a central theme of Aziz's perspective on franchising discussing and telling our story in an effective way includes all of those opportunities. And inside of IFA in particular, I've seen some of the most sophisticated social media work and public policy advocacy that I've seen anywhere. And it goes from how we engage there, where we engage, the targeting of it, and then in addition, as we've been growing the FAN, the Franchise Action Network, we have opened those tools up to small business owners all around the United States. And so in various different discrimination actions that were taking place on minimum wage in cities around the United States, we helped launch these folks into the social media sphere by tweeting at members that were meeting in different city councils and mayor's offices to voice their perspective. And I'm really excited to say we grew FAN last year from around 1,000 members to about 10,000. But we have over 800,000 business units out there in the franchise world, and we really need to raise our collective voices to bring that pressure to bear. And I'll tell you this, it is going to be increasingly difficult for people that aren't with us to ignore you know, these employers in their hometowns and in their districts that are getting more and more concerned about the threats that are coming at them. And we've only talked about NLRB at this point, which is what we at IFA term an existential threat. But the other ones that I mentioned was the wage and hour work that you know, there are hundreds of new over the past several years, hundreds of new investigators and lawyers over at the Department of Labor, whose job it is to prosecute things, and they're looking to do them serially, not you know, not one business at a time. So they would like to find some chains where they can make some hay. We have the ACA healthcare issues that are getting ready to hit small businesses. We have discriminatory minimum wage, which we've already touched on, and we have federal regulations on overtime and the persuader rule, and we have issues with access to capital at the same time. So it is a very busy and active play for us, and we have you know, five people in our federal and state government affairs practice here, and so knowing that that we can't be all places at once, we have been partnering with allied associations like the National Restaurant Association, which has nearly 50 professionals doing that kind of work, and so the National Retail Federation and others, and so. Hotel and lodging. So those are folks that we've engaged with, and we're trying to unite and form more voices to make sure that those public policy makers know about our perspective, and also can digest it on lots and lots of different forms of media. Everything from paper letters that have hit their office to telephone calls from angry constituents and tweets and Facebook posts, and we try to leave no stone unturned.
That's a big monumental task, and one that's obviously very passionate about social media as a communications tool. I'm glad to see that this is part of what the IFA will be doing moving forward. God, you talk about so much. We hadn't even talked about the world of data breaches and of course, sanitation at restaurants. And wow, we could talk forever, but we're closing in on the top of the hour. Robert, I told you earlier it would fly by. If you would, give us some parting thoughts. Anything that you want to talk about, what's coming up in franchising, your perspective, some heartfelt thoughts, whatever. I'll give you the next couple of minutes to share your piece.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I think I've touched on a lot of them, but one that I think stands out in my mind as a challenge for us to solve is that at the moment, this very moment and for the last little while, we find ourselves at loggerheads between some franchisee association folks and franchisors. And I think that the fact that we have an incoming chairman at IFA that is one of the sort of more well-known franchisees in the United States, and certainly one of the most successful ones, that we have an increasing number of very sophisticated and hardworking franchisees that are on IFA's board, it becomes incumbent on us at this time to seize an opportunity to get everyone on the same page. Because if franchisee groups and franchisors are busy focused on one another and arguing about contract rights in particular instances, we distract ourselves from the wolf that is really at the door, and that government regulation threatens to destroy everyone's lives, franchisees and franchisors, and it doesn't discriminate. So as I look at this, getting people to focus on that threat first, and not to minimize any of the other threats, by the way, is job one for us. And so I really look forward to Aziz's leadership in that regard, and I look forward to his vision. And we're going to be, taking a decidedly more engaged tack to clearing some of the underbrush out in that particular arena, and hopefully to focus together on the joint employer issue, because that one is extremely vexing, and it threatens everybody from doggy daycare to, very sophisticated medical clinics that do analysis for franchises. So I think that is our overall sort of view and perspective for the coming year.
It almost reminds me a little bit of the current political environment where I think it was Chris Christie in one of the debates who kept saying it repeatedly, we can kill each other as Democrats and Republicans, but we're all Americans, and let's not lose sight of that first. Kind of sounds a little bit parallel to what you've just shared here with Z's and Zor's, and we're all in franchising together and have to be interdependent to make it work. So let's self-regulate, let's self-direct, and let's have conversations just like you had with the administration in the White House last week.
I couldn't agree with you more, Stan.
Well, Robert, it's that time of the show where we're flying by, and we want to thank you for being our guest. I know you have an extremely busy schedule, so really honored and thankful that you took the time to spend an hour with us today on the air. Best of luck at the upcoming events, and best of luck as you're in your tenure as our leader. Really appreciate
thank you,
it.
Sir.
And I'm working on some improvement on my end, Robert. I missed the entire meeting at the White House, but I only missed half the show today. So hopefully I'll be for the ISA from door to door.
Thank you, guys. Robert. I look forward to seeing you at the convention. Bye-bye.
Same here.
Thanks, Robert.
Well, Stan, we've got it was a great show. I mean, a lot of information.
Yeah, this one really flew by for me, Paul.
Oh, yeah.
No pun intended, either.
Right? Well, next week our good old friend Jerry Darnell will be on, followed the following week by Anthony Owen from Minolto, and then, of course, by Dr. John Hayes on March 9th. So until next week, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.